This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it is 6 minutes after the hour, and it's the Friday before Christmas, the 23rd of December. And I want to tell you a little story. If I may. December the 25th, 1972. Christmas Day when I was just 7 years old. Just about the most perfect day I've ever had. I can't remember all the details, but the one that matters continues to make me smile for decades ever since. Electric football. My God, there it was. My mom had gotten me electric football, or was it Santa Claus? It didn't really matter. What mattered was that it was there under the tree. For anyone that doesn't remember, electric football was a game with a steel football field and a vibrating surface that was about as subtle as a hand grenade going off when you turned it on. The unforgettable buzz was intense and loud. Sometimes the players went where they were supposed to, but just as often they would go in circles or go the wrong way altogether. I played game after game with my brother Scott. After he taught me a few, quote, tricks about making the players go the right way. He actually taught me a lot of things over the years about how the world worked in his estimation. I found as the years go by, many of his insights were on the money. I don't recall now whether or not I asked for the timeless game, but if I did, I'm sure I saw it in the official Kids Book of Dreams, at the time better known as the Sears Catalog. Every great toy a kid could dream of or dare to ask for that the old elf could deliver were contained in those magical pages. It was bigger than a phone book. And kids' heads could literally explode conceiving of all the possibilities contained therein. I'd pore over those pages for hours with fantasies dancing in my head and reviewing each toy as to its chance of making it under the tree. At school, my friends and I would cover the details of each possible choice and who would be asking for what. The roaring buzz of electric football was finally too much for my mother after a few days, even though she had bought it, because I set up camp right there on the living room floor. Our championship games were then relegated to the basement from that point on. My brother lost interest after a while. And I was left to devise matchups between the deeply despised Dallas Cowboys and a variety of more worthy teams, most often in those days, the Los Angeles Rams. I spent hours, hundreds of hours in the basement, which was not what you might imagine. It was more like a dungeon on many days. It was not finished. It was not one of those great masterpieces you find in today's homes, but rather a bit damp and dark. A bit of a holding cell made of concrete blocks. Not quite a Michigan basement, but I would spend days down there pretending I owned the world. Weeks and months in the throes of a little boy's imagination. I passed my 8th and 9th birthdays painting each plastic figure using toothpicks and a lot of patience. I wish I had saved those, actually. They took me weeks to perfect, and I've got to say I did a pretty good job. They looked like Tony Dorsett or Jack Youngblood, even Mean Joe Green. We didn't have the electronic imagination thieves that we had today like the ones we give our kids that write the stories of our childhoods. We had to rely on ourselves for the storylines and the characters and the tales that we would weave in our heads of the far-off lands and make-believe that we would entertain ourselves with, not just for a day or a week, but often for years. As I lined up those tiny gladiators on the electric football field, I would write the story of a grand championship and last-minute heroics and incredible comebacks that would fill my head with images far larger than life. I was the hero of many of those grand stories, usually as the mastermind coach, directing players to the miracle finish in front of a cheering crowd. I would tear away from my sideline duties, but only for the most basic of needs. It never occurred to me in those simple, innocent, countless hours spent in the basement that I was somehow privileged, or that simply by being born white, I was destined to be blamed for everything wrong in the world. Our home was a simple farmhouse. We didn't even have color TV, and we didn't have a new car in the driveway, except on occasion when my father drove the company car home. My mother, who taught elementary school, would buy a new car every 8 years or so. And in 1972, we were still a couple years away from getting a new ride. We had decent clothes, but we certainly were not among the rich people in town. We were very average. Growing up, our town was mostly white kids, and there were a couple of black kids and a few kids that we called Mexicans because back then we didn't know any different. We didn't know there was a difference between Mexico or Cuba or Puerto Rico or Argentina, and frankly, we didn't care. We had some Indian kids, too. Not native kids, but kids that came from the nation of India. One of those folks became a good friend of mine. I don't think we gave much thought to racism or privilege or ever really conceived of such a thing. And we never thought that we were bad people because we were white. We treated everyone pretty much the same. And honestly, back then, we treated people pretty damn good. On the rare occasion the topic of race would come up, my mother would tell me how God had made someone for everyone. And that all people were basically good until they weren't. The world has certainly changed since then. That innocence has been stripped away. But I hope that there are children out there this year that are 7 or 8 or 9 and still have that innocence. But it's hard to imagine in this world of vitriol and finger pointing and downright nastiness that we have oftentimes, that the kids are missing it. Too many of them are attached to these electronic devices in their pocket, smartphones and computers, that not only steal their imagination, but may also steal their innocence. Because they're exposed to things, well, ever younger, it seems. Things are so much different today than they were in 1972. Some things are better, but some things certainly are not. It's been 44 years since I looked at that tree and thought to myself, my God, it's electric football. Of course, I've traveled thousands of miles and seen many things. And I can say this at least, that despite the vitriol and the division that many of us have felt this year during this combative election season, that I do see hope in the coming new year. I see possibilities. And I see the possibilities of not only great things for myself and my family, but for America and this nation to grow together. So I want you to embrace that imagination, my friends, and dream of something a little bit bigger, a little bit better, and something more than we had today. Dream big this Christmas, and Merry Christmas to you. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.